This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. It is Friday, and joining us, as he does frequently, to talk about the latest in the world of politics is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
I want to start off with a report we had here in the state of North Carolina. The Associated Press reports that Governor Pat McCrory failed to properly complete his financial disclosure statements. The investigation showed the governor didn't reveal some of his dealings with a licensed mortgage broker. That's what reporters do. They go through the public record. They check to see if you filled out everything properly and then report to we, the public, when they find these kinds of discrepancies. Well, the governor vehemently denies the report, says the Associated Press story was written with malice, printed a 34-page rebuttal the day after that report appeared. From a political perspective, how does this play out? I mean, does this work in the governor's favor, do you think, Ken?
Well, no, absolutely not. I mean, whenever you see a politician railing against the news media, whether it's Richard Nixon, whether it's Bill Clinton, whether it's Barack Obama, it just looks bad. It's part of the problem, of course, of being a businessman coming into politics and then, of course, having to account for all his financial interactions and things like that. But more importantly, the fact that he went through this 34-page diatribe against this Associated Press reporter. By the way, I just checked this out. Associated Press and Democratic Party have the same number of letters. So come on, I think there must be a connection there. But for him to do that, I think it just looks petty. And instead of just own it up and say, okay, we were late with some things and we're late with some reporting, but to go after, go attack on the news media, it just always looks bad, and there's no politician who's ever benefited from it.
Well, interestingly enough, they use the term with malice. Now, malice is a word we all understand as lay people, but it is a technical word. It's a term of art in the legal profession, and it's the one that you need in order to bring a libel suit. You have to say there was malice involved. That's the word they used. I mean, interesting, if they wouldn't appear on our show. We asked them if the governor's office would appear. They declined. You know, the question is, are you going to sue for libel? What kind of position does that put them in? If they say yes and sue and lose, huh, it was true. And, of course, if they say no, which is the most likely thing, then why did you use that word?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I didn't even think of that angle. But when the governor kept saying this was a political commercial, that there are political handprints all over, it sounds a bit of paranoia. And the sad thing is, one of the things that elected McCrory in the first place was that there were ethical problems with the two previous Democratic governors, Mike Easley and Beverly Perdue. And so, you know, basically he was the clean candidate, the businessman, the clean candidate who is going to come and rescue Charlotte and the state from corrupt politicians. And I'm not saying, of course, McCrory is corrupt, but when you get so defensive about a news report about your business dealings, it only asks more questions. And, of course, you know, you have a governor's race coming up right away, and obviously this will be part of the dialogue for that.
Well, and to amplify what you said, the news report itself said there are no allegations of criminal, that there was any criminal wrongdoing in this case. That's what they said.
No, the governor's same thing. Look, yeah. There's nothing improper, nothing right. Unethical, nothing illegal. And yet, you know, thou doth protest too much. Mm-hmm. Sorry for my lisp. But, I mean, it just seems like he's just going after the news media. It just keeps the story alive when it perhaps doesn't have to be.
But for 2 years, and is this the start of the gubernatorial campaign for 2016?
Oh, my goodness, yes, absolutely. I mean, when we saw not too long ago, and I think we talked about it on your last show, when the attorneys general and states around the country were going to sue the president on immigration, and Roy Cooper specifically refused to do it, and then the Republican Party chairman of North Carolina attacked Cooper of playing politics. Well, this race has been going on for a long, long time. And, you know, I don't know if you remember Charles Manley, Frank.
Charles Manley
was the governor of North Carolina who was defeated for re-election in 1850. No governor of North Carolina has been defeated since the very honorable Charles Manley.
Wow.
And, of course, Pat McCrory doesn't want to join that list.
I was only 4 years old at the time, so hardly. Hey, the state legislature is going to gear up again in a few weeks. Many items sure to be on the agenda. They've got lots of holdovers from last time. But because of the headlines, recent headlines, we're going to see some new legislation. Rodney Moore, who is a Democrat from Mecklenburg, plans to introduce legislation, or says he does, plans to introduce legislation that would ban the use of racial profiling by police. Now, how likely is this to see the light of day? He's a Democrat, of course, in a Republican legislature.
Well, and that's a very good point. And we saw some Republican responses. Pat Hurley, who's a member of the state legislature, she said that it's superfluous, that we already have the laws on the book that covers it. But there's obviously, look, there's no issue when we saw this in throughout 2014. There is no issue greater than race. It splits our people right down the middle, and the fact is that it was interesting that when Rodney Moore submitted this bill, it wasn't with anger, it wasn't with fiery rhetoric. He just said that there is deep distrust in the black communities of color with white police, with the police department, and something has got to be done. We're not saying that Michael Brown or Eric Garner or any of those were killed because of racial profiling, but the communities have got to have a greater trust in the police department. The police department has to treat these communities with greater respect, and perhaps one of the ways of doing this is with Rodney Moore's legislation.
I wonder what kind of traction it has, though. Remember, one of the first things Republicans did when they gained control of the legislature was to gut the Racial Justice Act, and that was a law that allowed those on death row to have a hearing if they thought race played a part in their sentencing. It wouldn't at all alter their conviction. And a number of cases then were actually brought and in some cases found that race was involved. At that point, the Republican legislature gutted the bill. It's gone. Now, that was before all of these headlines. Is there anything about the news out of Staten Island and Ferguson that changes the tone and forces this legislature to look more seriously at this legislation?
I think so. I mean, there's still many communities, many states around the country that do not allow for any kind of legislation against racial profiling. And you know, it just seemed like, as you point out, before Eric Garner, before Michael Brown, it seemed more theoretical. Now, of course, there were still instances around the country of white policemen shooting and killing black youths and black people. But it just didn't seem to have the national conversation that it does now. I mean, even with President Obama getting elected in 2008, and we had the Beer Summit and the Reverend Wright conversations, we still never saw the actual indications in communities where there's just tremendous fear out there that there are two parts, the police and the community, that just don't speak eye to eye, see eye to eye, and perhaps this piece of legislation, which may have been scoffed off prior to 2014, now looks much more serious and maybe more considered.
I'm talking to the political junkie Ken Rudin on the state of things. Ken, two North Carolina brothers made headlines this week for their appearance on C-SPAN. The Woodhouse brothers, America's and certainly North Carolina's favorite family feud, opposite ends of the political spectrum. Brad led communications for the Democratic Party. Dallas Woodhouse ran the state's chapter of the Koch-funded Americans for Prosperity. They're on C-SPAN. Here's what it sounded like.
Let's go to Joy. Go to Joy in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Somebody from down south.
Well, you're right. I'm from down south.
Oh, God's mom.
And I'm your mother. And I disagree that all families are like ours. I don't know many families that are fighting at Thanksgiving.
Is this really your mother?
No, it's my mom.
I was very glad that this Thanksgiving was a year that you two were supposed to go to your in-laws. And I'm hoping you'll have some of this out of your system when you come here for Christmas.
Yeah, we were not together this Thanksgiving. We are most years.
I would really like a peaceful Christmas. And I love you both.
Hey, now let me jump in, because this was not planned. She called in on the normal line. But since you did call in, Mrs. Woodhouse, what's it like to raise these two boys?
Well, it hadn't been easy.
There we go, Ken. And, you know, here's the thing. I mean, that's comical. But the Woodhouse brothers, in what ways do you think they embody the state of North Carolina? I mean, politics in North Carolina was ever thus. Those two brothers are an embodiment of what I think is unique about North Carolina politics. What's your take?
Well, I mean, you know, if you talk to Barry Madeline and James Carville, it's completely normal. I mean, I think that's fine. But you know what was so great about that piece of video is that when one of them said, "Oh God, it's Mom," he just puts his hand in his head and saying, "I can't believe Mom is calling us out on this." But this is the problem of, I mean, it's not only just our country, our state, it's our families too. There's just tremendous feuding and disagreements within parties, and you kind of think that maybe Christmas at least is a time where we can put these things behind us. But there was so much fun to listen to this, so much fun to watch it, the looks on their face, and not that not that Brad and Dallas are going to come together and suddenly end their different partisan views, but it's nice every now and then to have mom saying, look, let's cut this stuff out, at least for the holidays, let's all come together. Mm-hmm. As Rodney King would say, let's all hug.
Well, I think Moms for a Better America. By the way, their body language was identical. I mean, I think that is also cool.
Yeah.
It's like, they grew up in the same house. We need more moms to bring the world together. Ken, happy holidays to you. What a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us this year, and we will be back with you next year as well. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks so much. Safe holidays to you and your family.
Thank you, Ken. Just up, we're going to talk about little golden books. You remember those books? Reading those books, hardcover, the golden spine, the beautiful pictures, the great little stories. We're going to talk to the editor of Little Golden Books about just how important they are, and we want to hear your memories. So call us, 877-962-9862. You can send us an email at sot@wunc.org or tweet us at #LGB, Little Golden Books, because we're going to talk about it next on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.